Broadcasting statewide on the Golf Club Network, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Good morning. We are worldwide at RadioGolfClub.com. It's a beautiful Saturday morning, October 9th. It's still 2010. In Hawaii, we're on all four islands, Maui, the Big Island, Oahu, and I'm in Hilo, actually. I have to say that specifically, because if you're listening in Kona, you're probably catching Kone from Maui. And Kauai, good morning. It's a beautiful day. If you'd like to play a round of golf, I've got some tee times for you. Volcano, you know it's 51 degrees up in Volcano, 10 o'clock, 10:30. Makalei has a 9:48, 10:44. Kalepahui, you're getting out to play. May you all hit the sweet spot every time. Kiahuna Junior Classic is underway, and at Puakea, you can play 9:54 and 11:15. Ko'olina has an 11:04 and a 12:32. At Luana Hills, the Whiffers. The Whiffers? this should be my name, okay? The Whiffers, the Duffers and the Whiffers should go out and play against one another. May you all hit the sweet spot as well, at least once. There's an 11:30 if you don't have a tee time, a 10:50 and a 1:10. And McKenna, there's an 8:40, a 9:20, an 11:04. And the Better Half Golf Tournament is underway today at McKenna. Fun. Oh, speaking of McKenna, you know, we've got some fabulous, the 2010 Special Award winners were announced by the Aloha Section PGA. The Golf Professional of the Year is Steve Murphy from Princeville. Yay, Steve. Greg Nichols got the Horton Smith Trophy. Way to go, Greg. I could go, you know, Teacher of the Year, Kevin Hayashi. Yo, Kevin, you haven't been on the show in forever. Steve Murphy wins twice, Merchandiser of the Year for Resort Course. What's up with that? How'd you get both of those votes? And then we've got, I was thinking of McKenna, of course, Kirk Nelson, Assistant Professional of the Year. Yeah. Okay, and then Jerry King at Kapalua Golf Academy, the President's Plaque. Way to go, Jerry. And we've got TaylorMade golf balls to give away to the 18th caller. Beautiful Penta Pearls. I want to thank you to our sponsors. Star Protection. Get the star team on your property for foot patrol, for building security, for shopping centers. Whether you need help or you'd like to join the star team, you just call Star Protection. They do event security, whether you're putting on a big event like the SPS Championship. You've got stars from around the world. Call Star Protection. Moon Physical Therapy. They are doctor recommended and insurance approved. Whether you've been hurt, it's a workman's comp claim or in a car accident, or maybe you've just recovered from a really serious, you know, some kind of heart operation or anything, hip replacement surgery, something to do with your shoulders, go to Moon Physical Therapy. They're just across from Sports Authority. Therapy that achieves results. And Alakai Mechanical, the best minds in plumbing and air conditioning. They are statewide. Excellent service, expert knowledge, work, product. You can depend on Alakai Mechanical. And Hawaii Golf, news and travel, 808golf.com. Thank you for all of your support and joining us far, far away from the beautiful Isles. The Emerald Isle. Would that be Ireland's name?
It would, the sort of the wet Emerald Isle.
Well, that's why you're green.
Yes. We have it forced upon us.
You have it forced? Well, we could use some of it being forced upon us, because
we... But we never like to hear that, Danielle. It doesn't work as an argument.
No? No?
No. Because, you know, the fact that you might want some of our rain, whereas actually you're in the sun there, you know?
You have no mercy. We're in a drought. We need some of your rain. I'm so glad to welcome John Richardson to the show, author of Dream On, and the creator of Break Par Blueprint Golf. Okay, now, first of all, you need to know that John is, and was, I mean, he started off as a real keen golfer in high school. Then as work and family and all the things that come along with getting older took over his life, he couldn't golf as much. And he found that, like, you couldn't break 100?
That's right. That's the stage I'd got to. A sort of classic, very frustrated golfer who couldn't break 100.
You know, and after you were shooting in the 70s when you were in high school, you were...
Oh, no, I never got to that stage. But I got to the stage where I could play, I could shoot comfortably in the 80s, really, you know. But I sort of reached 15, and the bug had bit more than anything else, more than any actual ability biting, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I got hooked and addicted by the whole thing, and then we moved house. But I never really got to the stage where I broke 80.
Okay.
But I kind of, I saw Seve playing and... in the very early 80s and thought, yes, that seems like the life for me. I'd quite like to be, you know, like Seve Ballesteros.
Didn't you, you caught a train with a friend? You cut school to go down and see Seve Ballesteros?
Yeah, we went down, three of us went down when we were 15. I mean, just ridiculous stuff, really, but because we just got lost and all over the place, you know, completely useless wee fellas. And we got lost, but we ended up finally at the Irish Open. And I think Seve won about 3 years in a row at that stage, or certainly maybe, you know, 3 years out of four or something like that. But he was just this incredibly swashbuckling, you know, maverick kind of a character. And I think when you're that age, you're looking for people like that to an extent.
Yep.
To try and idolize. And it was a very powerful image watching Seve at that stage. A number of my friends, you know, talk to me about that whole thing and wonder whether it's some sort of a homosexual fantasy I have over Seve, but it's not. It was just classic golfing hero worship, if I could just break that.
Every guy has a guy hero. You're supposed to have a guy hero. That's
exactly
part of, right, you know, and good that you had someone who is of such a high caliber, not just in his ability to play, but in his whole being is so elevated. He's, I mean, the man is amazing. And
amazing, yeah. Amazing.
Really. So you, in your book, Dream On, you use Seve Ballesteros as a person talking to you, doing kind of... And now, this is the beauty, guys, all right? We've talked to John for, I don't know, several years now. And do you remember when he was, like, dreaming about making his book into a movie?
That's right.
And here we are. Dream On, man. And it's... It is so important that you never, ever give it up, because, what, you're going to start shooting, the movie starts shooting in July?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I do quite a lot of corporate speaking now about this, Danielle, and without launching too much into all of that stuff, for want of a better term, the whole Dream On thing really, for me anyway, extends way beyond the golfing challenge. And, you know, as you say, when we first started talking, I don't know whether I even had the publisher yet. I think it maybe had just got my publisher, but the book was maybe just starting, not really getting anywhere. And but that book, I had 83 rejections for that book. So the dream of getting a successful book was the second big goal after doing the golf challenge. And, you know, I read somewhere actually just earlier on today, and I was commenting to my wife about somebody who'd had a relatively successful book here in the UK, a business book. And the girl was saying, you know, that she'd been turned down 9 times. And we both laughed at, you know, 9 times.
Nine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So this
was
rejected 83 times, and it then became the best-selling golf book in the UK. We sold the film rights about 6 months ago. And I kind of assumed, because I have a few friends in the film business, that would just be something that I would, you know, that nothing would really happen with. And even if it did happen, it would be very, very slow. But I had a, you know, wildly exciting conversation from my behalf, anyway, with the producers last week. And they've got a guy called James Nesbitt, tentatively to play me, who would be one of, who probably is the biggest UK TV actor. And he has done a number of films as well. I'm not sure whether you're familiar with him, but he...
His name sounds familiar to me.
Yeah, well,
James Nesbitt.
Yeah, he's a very big deal over here. Bizarrely, I actually went to school with him. He's about 2 years older than me.
Wow.
He's a very big TV actor here, and has done, as I say, a few movies as well. So he's, you know, that's very exciting. And they start shooting in July. So very, very exciting times.
Where are they? Where is it being shot? What?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the reality is, if they've chosen him, they're clearly wanting to continue the Irish angle.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about the story, as you well know, is it's a rags to riches through golf story. It could be set anywhere. It could be set in Australia. It could be set in South Africa. It could be set in Hawaii. It really doesn't have to be necessarily an Irish story. I think because I hope because I put a fair amount of Irish kind of humour in it, that they would want to continue to do that Irish angle. And if they've chosen James Nesbitt, well, then that's, you know, they almost certainly are. And as I say, because I went to school with him, it's not as if he's going to have to amend his accent in any way.
That's right.
He'll be able to speak far too fast the way I do as well. So.
Yeah. Slow down. I think we're all catching on, though. You know, I mean, it's a little, they just get into the rhythm, and pretty soon you start wanting to talk just like you. One of the beauties of the creation of Dream On is to understand that what John Richardson did is he spent a year deciding he was going to break par. And in the process of doing this, he tried literally everything. I mean, what did your wife find in the living room by the TV set when she finally said, "This is it, I've had it"? Was it a sledgehammer?
It was a sledgehammer. You know, as I stand here now, I'm in my office, which is above the garage, and you know, there are probably now about 100 golf books dotted around. You know, because I've collected a few more since I finished, and that was the more sort of sensible side of the whole thing. You know, buy lots of golf books. You know, watch 30 or 40 odd videos. You know, all sorts of other nonsense too. I mean, even actually discarded around the room here. There's quite a lot even here as I look. You know, the discarded weighted clubs and things. But in the early days, what I decided, the simplest way to try and get fit and groove in my, or to try and develop golf muscles and groove in a swing,
right,
was to swing a sledgehammer. Now, the nice thing to have done, obviously, for my wife would have been to do that in the back garden. But when it got cold, you know, I used to bring the sledgehammer in. And then I made the fatal error of getting cross with her for moving the sledgehammer. You know, where's my sledgehammer gone? And then that was, you know, that's when she sort of snapped, because it was a, you know, I got in such a state of madness to think that it was acceptable to behavior to get cross with my wife for moving the sledgehammer.
Out of her living room.
Yes. Where, of course, everybody should keep their sledgehammer. And this is, I mean, this isn't a nice, shiny new sledgehammer. This is a dirty old sledgehammer, you know.
Yes. Okay. So we're going to take a break, and we've got to come back and talk about, you see, as the process, not only did this fabulous book, and I really recommend, go to Amazon.com and order it, because it is a great, great read, because not only do you have the experience that John goes through, and you hear Seve talking to him, and it's almost like you really have I hope Seve has read this. It would be wonderful. So we'll take a break, and we'll talk about how the blueprint became reality. Well, right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Danielle Tucker when we return to the golf club.
Summer is coming. Whether you're in an office, store, building, or shopping center, your AC on the fritz can ruin your day and stop your business. Alakai Mechanical does it all, from design to installation to preventative maintenance of your AC system so that it operates more efficiently. Alakai's world-class technicians use only quality components to keep you cool. Protect your investment. From window units to chiller plants across Hawaii. Call Alakai Mechanical, keeping Hawaii cool. Moon Physical Therapy is here to help you back to recovery. Moon Physical Therapy is located on Ward Avenue across from Sports Authority. Physician prescribed for motor vehicle accidents, workman's comp, or that body pain that comes from rushing to play without warming up. Also event cardiopulmonary rehabilitation with our one-on-one patient care. Moon's aquatherapy heated endless pool allow for low-impact exercise with less pain on land. We will give you the right exercises to get you back to health. Ask your doctor to prescribe Moon Physical Therapy. Moon Physical Therapy. We achieve results.
It's the Golf Club. Visit our website at www.radiogolfclub.com. You can hear previous archived shows. Just hit the listen button and pick the show you want to hear. Email Danielle with your thoughts and requests. Contact us about advertising and check out our sponsor link. That's www.radiogolfclub.com. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
And congratulations to Reese Suzuki, a sophomore at Iolani High School and member of their golf team. He won the Amateurs Olamana Shootout and he did it against Eric Sonnenberg, who's a very hot contender on the amateur. Reese, good going. All right, we're talking with John Richardson. Now, what he did is he decided that he'd had enough with, you know, this can't even break 100 anymore playing golf, when he had actually, at one point in his life, at least shot in the 80s. Wouldn't you like to do that, too? I'd love to shoot in the 80s regularly. That'd be nice, but I don't, because I don't practice enough. I don't play enough. You have to have some commitment to the game. You have to get out there and groove that swing, maybe not with a sledgehammer, as John was doing. But so he went 363 days. But in the book, you'll notice that in the first, I don't know, he kind of put things off. He procrastinated a bit. He thought he could really, you know, put the putting off, or, you know, what's putting? All these things that you probably would do the same thing. When you read this book, it's like you can put yourself right in his shoes. Because he does it, he really bears his soul. He bears the humanness of what we do when we take on a goal. We put things off. We think, oh, this thing is going to be simple. We don't heed the advice. Now, Sam Torrance told him straight out. Sam Torrance said, when somebody said, you know, that you're going to break par in a year, and Sam went, dream on. Now, I, of course, that's where the book title came from. I always take dream on as being like a positive, affirmative. But actually, it came from a negative, right, John?
That's right, yeah. I mean, it was a sort of a sarcastic negative. I mean, I won't hear a bad word said against Sam Torrance now, obviously, because he mentioned the book, as you know, on the final day of the Open over here last year, and that's one of the things that catapulted it up the chart. So he helped to inspire me, and then really much helped in terms of, you know, the sales of the book too.
Yeah, and what you always remember in life is if somebody says something like, "You'll never achieve that," hey, that's probably the best thing anybody can tell you.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, that helped me a lot, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps you, to an extent, it helps you, you know, brilliantly when you're fired up and feeling very positive about what you're doing. But then whenever things are going badly, it's very easy then to think, now, you know, Sam Torrance, maybe he does know something, you know.
He's got a clue.
But, you know, he won 22 European titles, you know, in the Ryder Cup. You know, who am I to decide that I know more than him about golf?
Yeah, you know, you, your wife and Josh Karp's wife should get together. He wrote a book sort of similar to what you did in a different vein. He sought out every potential coach you could imagine, and
right,
every different philosophy in the Zen vein. And everyone comes to him and says, you know, your wife's a saint for,
yeah,
putting up with you, right? And isn't that what happens to you now?
Oh, all the time, yeah. I mean, about half of the reviews on Amazon for my book tend to mention the fact that, you know, that how much of a saint my wife must have been.
Yeah, and what comes to my mind is in the book you talk about how you got lost. In summer in Ireland, you can be out at 10 o'clock at night and it's still bright, right?
You can be out until sort of 10:30 relatively easily, and the problem with that is that, you know, you sort of forget how late it is.
Yeah.
And
then you forget your phone someplace.
Yeah, I forgot my phone, and it got to nearly midnight before I checked. That's what time it was. I forgot my phone, and yeah. You notice I change my tone when I talk about this one, because I still feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
So I jumped in the car and hammered home at a huge rate, and my phone had, you know, she tried me 17 times, and was distraught, and was literally just about to phone the police because she thought something had happened to me. And this is because, previous to this, I had, on the golf course that I practice on, there are poachers on it, and so they come out and they shoot the rabbits and so on late at night. And of course, I was practicing by moonlight, just short game around the green. And I had come home and joked about the fact that I thought I was going to be turned into a teabag because they were out with their shotguns. So that all seems like a hilarious joke, you know, when you tell it during the day. But when I'm sitting there at 11 o'clock at night, and I've told that joke beforehand that I might get shot, you know, it all seemed very silly, you know, that was probably what was happening to me.
Yeah.
But I survived both the poachers and my wife's wrath.
You did. And what I bring this up is because, obviously, John Richardson has gone through just about everything you can imagine to try to break par in a year. He did it.
Yay.
Now,
yeah. Hooray!
Yay! And then you say, "Well, that's nice. I think I'll go do something else." Now, do you still practice? Can you still break par?
I haven't played much at all this year, Danielle. I would think I'd be lying if I said I could at the moment. But uh-huh. I can still pull it together pretty well. But yeah, I think what you do is you lose a lot of that touch around the green. Really, is what you do. And when you're playing down at that level, then. And you haven't been working hard at it, what happens is you lose that touch on the green, you lose that ability to get your pitches and chips, within a foot or two. And then you have those cup two or three wee swing problems that maybe start to exaggerate out again.
Uh-huh.
And lo and behold, what should have been, what was a 70 can easily stretch out to being, an 85.
Okay.
So those are the things that slip,
Right. And that's why you have to keep practicing. So if you go out today to play... remember, have fun. Lord knows you're going to be out on the most beautiful, well-kept garden imaginable, right? And you've got 4 hours in beautiful surroundings. You're in a park, in a God's park, because, who takes care of your garden as well as the superintendent of the golf course and all the people that work on the golf course? And they manicure everything for you. So you get to be in these beautiful surroundings, and you get to hit the ball, and if it doesn't go exactly where you will, that's just, don't worry about it. It just go hit again. There was a great article that Mary Armstrong wrote. She was commenting on the Ryder Cup, but she said, "I remember as a youngster playing golf with no thought of winning or losing, only the anticipation of the next shot. If I hit a bad shot, there was only the eagerness for a new challenge. With the next one. That's all there was. No good shot or bad shot. No scolding myself when I hit that dreaded pull hook or patting myself on the back for making a 10-footer. The game was pure. I sometimes think it would be better for us to play the game without scoring once in a while. Not a bad idea. So, if you haven't practiced, just go have fun." Now, knowing all this, that you know about John Richardson now and the book that he wrote, and now they're making a movie. It impressed people that much. He created Break Par Blueprint that you can take advantage of. And this is like a 12 modules that you created for fellow amateur golfers, a video course covering each of the skills, the key skills that you learned by going through everything possible, all the gizmos. Tell us about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are lots of different ways to learn to swing a golf club, I think, was always my view. I learned, I suppose, a combination of relatively traditional ways with a golf pro, and then a lot of help through from a guy called Jim McClellan, who lives in the States. But at the end of the day, there are a lot of golf swings out there. Jim Furyk, is a classic example of somebody who swings a golf club, a very different way.
Yeah.
To the way Tiger swings, to the way Phil Mickelson swings, and Tiger has worked through several different swings in his life. There's a fascinating video on YouTube that you can see at a clinic that Tiger and Anthony Kim did, and the key message that Tiger says is, don't get hooked up on the golf swing. The most important, there are lots and lots of different ways to swing a golf club. Now, you have somebody like Rory McIlroy, who arguably has one of the most beautiful swings in the world, and you can see that actually, yes, it's very important to have a great golf swing. But then, of course, you've got Jim Furyk, who's just won the FedEx Cup, with a very unorthodox golf swing.
Mm-hmm.
But
I don't know if he recovers from his backswing, frankly.
Well, exactly. but somehow he does, and my point, really, between all of that was that actually the key thing is to get a golf swing, kind of as best as you can. Stick with one pro, really, as long as it's a decent pro, and work at that. And really what the Break Par Blueprint was about was to try and wrap everything else that was around that. So get your golf swing, keep focusing on the fundamentals, the basics. And then what we do is we work through these various other modules in terms of lots of the mind game, a lot of the short game stuff, as well as creating an environment where people can come in and work within the forum and meet other people who are trying to make big changes in their golf too. And I suppose we've had about 1,000 people that have gone through that process now. And, you know, it's been very exciting from my perspective, because you get to see a lot of all of those things that I learned then, you know, being applied to other people and,
right.
and getting some amazing results.
And that's wonderful. And what I love about it is, some of the simple things that you can do in the blueprint. We need to talk a little bit about module 4 after this
mm-hmm.
break. Improving while lying flat on your back.
Yes.
Right after this, my name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the green with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club. Star Protection Agency has been providing security across Hawaii since 1991, guarding your business, buildings, and retail. Whether it's a store or an entire shopping center, Star Protection provides the security you need. You can join the Star Team. We're looking for a few good men and women. Call Star Protection Agency at 532-3911 or on the web at starprotectionagency.com. Star Protection, locally owned with people you trust.
Need a good plumber 24/7? Alakai Mechanical has the best, from design to installation to maintenance. If you need more than a quick fix, get it repaired by the team at Alakai Mechanical. Whether you're in a home, restaurant, office building, or shopping center, your plumbing has to work. Alakai's world-class plumbing technicians use quality parts to keep your water and sewer lines working properly. Protect your investment. Licensed and insured. Call Alakai Mechanical across Hawaii. Your plumbers on call.
When you walk into your office or get up in the morning, what's the first thing you do? Turn on your computer and check your mail. Oh no, what does that mean? The hard drive can't be located. Whether it's a PC or Mac, desktop, laptop, network, whatever your problem, call the computer doctor on Nimitz Highway next to Eagle Cafe. Bring it in or call for an on-site appointment. The computer doctor is there to get you back up and running fast. When you need service or want the right new computer, call 532-7213. The computer doctor is on call.
Oh, man, will you look at that? It's right down the fairway. What a beautiful shot. Oh, man, can't be too happy about that one.
Now, back to Danielle Tucker on The Golf Club.
Welcome back. Last weekend, the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association Match Play Championship at Ka'anapali, anybody's game in those final matches, with the momentum shifting, you know, throughout the game. The three players, though, crowned champions in the boys, 13-14, Gino Son, boys 15-18, Alex Chiarella, and the girls 13-18, Casey Komoto. And all of this is working up to the Asia Pacific Junior Cup, and it's very exciting. This is the fourth year where Japan junior players will come up and play compete against the Hawaii junior golfers, as you know, based on the points that the junior golfers here in Hawaii have accumulated, they get to make the team, and it's Ryder Cup style. So it's a lot of fun, a real challenge for these kids, and they're all working hard to make that team. That's their goal right now. Speaking of goals, is your goal just to improve your game? Well, what John Richardson did was he spent about 363 days hitting 35,000. Can you imagine counting 30? Did you really count those, John?
Well, what I did was I counted the tickets afterwards.
Yeah.
I kept all my tickets, and then I was able to go back afterwards and
what?
I didn't exactly count them one by one.
Thank you so much. Yes, 35,000 golf balls. He read at least 60 golf books, viewed dozens of instructional videos, had every possible gadget and gizmo sent to him so he could try it out and see if it worked. You know all the gadgets you see that are advertised that are going to take strokes off your swing. So what he did is he went through all of this. Then he created Break Par Blueprint for folks, amateurs. All of this was, the challenge was recorded in a monthly column in Golf Digest Ireland, and other magazines, of course, did articles about him, and he was on Today's Golf for a full spread. So lots of experience, took all of what he learned and put it into this. In Module 4, improving while lying flat on your back?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more about this. This is something I can do after work.
I think, yeah, this is the point, you see. You know, as you say, it took 363 days, but, you know, I had a full-time job, as you know, and I was, you know, well, as we've covered before, I maybe wasn't the world's best husband, but I did try and be about at home as much as possible. So what I had to do was try and find all of the ways to try and sneak in practice, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
To try and look at all of the ways to do it without being able to, because I didn't have 40 hours a week or 50 hours a week to practice at golf.
No, and he actually came home and he read stories to his daughter before bedtime.
That's right. I mean, I would come home, make the tea, make a dinner, and you know, be the good dad, you know, and read the story, and then go up to the range. But what I was always looking for were ways to try and shortcut the whole thing. So, for example, one of the things that I would do is that I would always carry my bag, because in the early days, because I used to think I knew I needed to get fit, so that I could be much fresher for the last sort of 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th holes. And what I would do is I'd get up early in the morning and basically run around the course with my bag. So I was getting fit as well as doing my golf practice.
Yeah.
Likewise, that technique with the sledgehammer involved me getting fit as well as grooving in the swing.
Right.
So I was trying to always try and look for ways to double up in terms of my effort, and then also being able to be working on my golf whenever perhaps, you know, I wasn't even able to be standing at the range or out in the golf course. And that involved then using visualization techniques. So I had read a lot about, I think it started maybe in the 70s that a lot of, athletes were really starting to visualize, to try and improve their performances in lots of different sports. And I would literally, every night lying in bed, I would play my way around the course. I would play my way around the course in par. So I would start off in the first tee, and I would hit a perfect drive and then a perfect wedge up to that first hole, and then work my way onto the second and get myself the whole way around. Now, there is a lot of evidence out there to say that this works. And in my view, you know, it worked for me. It was a very nice way, you know, to just, as I say, squeeze in that little bit of extra practice. And there's no doubt that you slowly do build up this belief that you can do the thing, whether it's, any form of athletic endeavor, or I suppose even for business folk as well, you know, going through, you know, confidence perhaps in selling or public speaking or any of those things. If you can keep mentally rehearsing it, you will start to then stand on the first tee or on stage and feel much more comfortable about what you're doing.
Exactly, exactly. And visualizing it, practicing it in your mind prepares your body, and your body is kind of like responding to your mind without you actually standing up and walking around. There are muscles
very much.
That, yeah.
And they can measure that. They can measure the brain, what goes on in the brain, what you're visualizing, what's going on, and the similar muscle twitching going on as if you were actually doing it, for real.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Okay, but you want to do some research.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is over the next few weeks to find out what the real frustrations are.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but I've worked out, you know, with a number of golf pros as well, and a lot of, I obviously made some fascinating connections whilst I've been, you know, with the success of the book and managed to meet some great people who I wouldn't necessarily have been able to meet before. But I've come up with this list of these 10 classic golf mistakes that amateurs seem to make when they're trying to improve, and they include, you know, that, well, the two classic ones are very poor, pre-shot routine.
Yeah.
And then under-clubbing always, you know, in their approach to the green. There are all sorts of other classic ones in there, you know, really like not focusing on putting and short game and all of those other things.
So
what I want
to
try and...
You did that. You were guilty of that. In the
of course I was, yeah. I mean, yeah. I came up with 10 mistakes based on the fact that I did every single one of them, you know. You know, there's no doubt about it. And then gradually, if you keep reading all of the magazines and you keep reading all of the books, you realize that there's a pattern here, that everybody's really doing the same thing, and that all the golf pros are seeing out, particularly in pro-ams. These guys are out playing in pro-ams on a very regular basis, and they're seeing their amateur playing partners making these same mistakes. But what I really wanted to do is, it's all very well me who's observed the thing and sort of the 1,000-odd people that we've had through the Breakpart Blueprint, but also golf pros observing it and saying, this is what we see. But what I want to try and do is find out, well, from a golfing perspective, what is the big frustration that amateur golfers have? You know, what is it that they believe is the thing that holds them back? You know, is it a chronic slice? Is it, you know, is it that maybe the marketplace is too crowded with constant, they're too distracted by the new golf clubs? You know, again, I did that too.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that stops them from wanting, from making the progress that they think, you know?
Yes.
So we're going to try and, well, certainly I'm going to be surveying all of the people, you know, on the list, and I'll hopefully get a bit of press coverage, media coverage, to try and ask that question on a wider basis. Because, you know, it's very easy to judge what other people think without necessarily just asking them themselves, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what I think is important is that you give people an opportunity to just to boil it down to what is it that's getting in your way. And I think,
you know, if I was to ask you then, Danielle, what what do you think would be the big frustration that you what's getting in your way?
Time.
Time, right?
Time.
Yeah.
You know, it's time. It's finding the time to be able to go and actually let everything else in my life go away. And I find, well, you know, with children, you know, when you're with children, everything falls away. You don't think about all of the pressures. You know, you get to be with the kids and just have fun. What I should do is take the clubs with me, and then mm-hmm. all of us go to the range and have fun together. You know, if I could, what you did is you combine things that you did, you know, and so that would be an opportunity for me. I also question my club selection and whether or not I'm using the proper equipment. And I think that's a real key thing, what you brought up there, is that we are inundated with all of these different articles about the next best club, the irons, the cavity back, the proper, there's a pigskin grip out now, you know? I mean, am I using the right grip? Am I using the right shaft? Should it be steel? Should it be, you know, graphite? Does it flex? Does it, you know, at this point in my, does it really mean anything to my game? My game is more a game. It's not a challenge to me to see how much better I can become. It's supposed to be a time where I can relax and not think too much and just enjoy myself. So that's really where I think for people to be able to really be honest with you and be able to send this, you can find John Richardson on Facebook, as well as, of course, at breakparblueprint.com, breakparblueprint.com. If someone wanted to answer that question.
If they go to the breakparblueprint.com, which is the page, obviously, where you get to see my wife and my daughter slapping me in the face. After the full year of frustration that they put up with. But if you go there and enter your name and email address, then I will start asking that question to that list, hopefully in the next week or so.
Okay.
And you get to see some of the various tips that I give away there anyway. But that's the best way to sort of to get onto that list. And I would love to get as many people as possible to answer that question.
That's good.
Because, you know, everybody has different goals is the other thing, you know.
Yeah.
Although, having said that, most keen golfers start the year by thinking, right, this is the year that I'm going to finally break 80, you know, get down to 10 or...
You mean the same goal that every woman has when she starts the new year and says she's going to lose that 20 pounds that she's told herself that she's going to lose and she's going to go exercise, you know? Yeah, okay. That's those people who go to the gym for the first 2 or 3 months. Oh, there
exactly.
You just got slapped by your daughter. You're right. You actually can go to this website and she's shoving golf balls in his mouth. This is breakparblueprint.com and sign up here. And he doesn't give your email address to anybody.
Absolutely not. No.
Absolutely not. You got smacked again. You've got to go check this out. Okay, they're giving him a piece of their mind.
Yeah.
We're going to bring someone in. Dave McCracken created the Skills Challenge. I think, you know, you've seen this at different events and on the Golf Channel. I shouldn't say the. I don't know. It's ingrained in my mind to say the. On Golf Channel. I'm always amazed that they're able to say that, you know. On Golf Channel. You've seen it. On Golf Channel. The Skills Challenge. And Dave wanted to make a scramble format that would allow people to actually believe in the scores, the outcome, and believe that the person, the team, that wins that trip to Vegas actually did it on merit rather than on cheating. Is it too strong a word to say, Dave?
No, it's not too strong a word to say. It's just unfortunate that kind of that's how human nature is when you're keeping your own score. Not that everybody would do that, but there's always an element, and sometimes it's an ego thing, and sometimes it's about a prize. But yeah, so that's what I did, and it's going great.
It is going great. We had two courses in Hawaii, one at Pearl, one at Turtle Bay, and they put on the teams of four came together. What you do is you at the tee, two of you hit at the same exact time. That's what set, same exact time. Then on the fairway, the four of you, same exact time. Not exactly the same time. Nobody can, it's not like you're going to be put on a clock and find out if you all struck the ball exactly at the same time. But it's the idea. Then when you get on the green, two of you are going to putt, and then the other two putt, okay, which is kind of cool because you can see where your teammates have ended up. Now, we've had the quarterfinals in Vegas. How do those quarterfinals go at Coyote Chase?
They went great. We had a team from Arizona, a team from Palm Springs, and two teams from Northern California qualified for the finals, which will be next Monday, the 18th of October. And they will play in the morning, and the winning gross team and the winning net team will play with John Daly and Scott McCarron along with their club professional. And it's going to be a sight to behold. And it went great. The winning score was 16 under par, which is a record score, and that's very good. And we're going to make the course a little tougher for the finals, though. But we're looking forward to wrapping this year up and having a champion. And what we're really excited is about next year, which is going to be a two-person team. We'll still do the four-person team for charity events, but we're going to be doing a two-person team next year, which is going to make it a lot easier for somebody to call up their buddy and say, hey, let's go play in this event, rather than having to get three other people in their busy lives together.
Yes,
and,
I was thinking about that, Dave, because when I thought about four people trying to figure out if they could get off of work and take a week off to go to Vegas and then hopefully go back for the semi and the finals, that's a lot of coordinating of schedules.
Yeah, and we found that, especially in this this economic climate we're in, too. So we made some big changes that your listeners are going to love. First off, when they play next year in a qualifier, they will go to a sectional championship right there in Hawaii, where they will play against all of the other winners. And then if they win that, when they advance to Las Vegas, they will have all expenses paid. And that's going to be an exciting thing for them to go, and it will be a two-day championship back in Vegas. Now, they can come longer if they want, but we've made it so it's going to be very affordable, and if you make it to the next level, and we're going to have the PGA sections involved, many of them across the country, helping to promote it. And, we're going to add an additional net flight, so it will be a gross flight and two net flights, so all handicapped players can feel comfortable they have a chance to win. And we believe the two-person event's going to be really great. So we're going to play sixums, which is three two-person teams together, so it's going to really be fun. And you're going to have to really work hard with your partner to decide before you hit each shot who's going to hit it where, who's going to go for the pin, and who's going to play it safe. Are you both going to attack the pin? And strategy is going to be wonderful. And right now, any golf course that's out there, we're going to have 24 courses in Hawaii. The first 24 will be in the first sectional. And they should go online and register. If there's people out there that want to play in the event, they should really make sure their golf course gets registered, because we are going to be doing it on a limited basis. Now, we will expand if the demand meets another sectional. Yeah. Right now, we're just looking forward to having that done in 2011.
Excellent. So you'll have, for charities, you'll still have the foursomes.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
How, if you're a charity, and we have a lot of charity events, if you wanted to play in charity events, you could find one. How would a charity get in touch with Set Scramble to get, you'd have to get in touch with you, right, to do it?
Sure, sure. It's setscramble.com. You know, you said it's SCT, and that stands for Same Exact Time. And you go to setscramble.com, and you just click on, or it says tournaments, and click on charity, and scroll down, and there's a registration. There's no charge for a charity hold an event. We're still kind of giving free samples, if you will. And so if you've got a charity for the Boys and Girls Club of, you know, Honolulu, or wherever it turns out to be, mm-hmm. You just go on there, and you not only do you get to, you know, use the format, but you also get some hole-in-one prizes that we give us away as well. That if somebody gets a hole-in-one and they pay no insurance for that. So it's really an incredible value, and it helps us get the brand out. You know, we have 5 PGA Tour players wearing our logo right now, and Jason Zubak, the world long drive guy, the record holder, as far as, you know, 5-time champion also. So we have a lot of exposure out there. We still call ourselves the best-kept secret in the world, but that's changing because now that the some of the sections in the PGA of America are getting involved, a quote from their main guy at the PGA said, this is exactly what golf needs right now. And Johnny Miller, the Johnny Miller, says that we built a better mousetrap. So, you know, we're excited about where we're going. The two-person event is perfect for what it is we're intending to do, and the golf course is still get to run additional golfers through their golf course.
Yes.
And, yeah, so it works out good. It's a win-win.
For the two-person event, we have on the 24 courses signing up here in Hawaii. I'm thinking large. So the 24 courses sign up in Hawaii. They have mm-hmm. their local event, and then there's the sectional. And if your team, gross team or net team, wins, then did you say it's an all-expense paid to Las Vegas? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so for example, we have a women's division too, Danielle, and I want you playing in this thing. So you're gonna
women's? Really?
Oh, yeah, we're going to have everything I've done has had women's divisions in it in the past. This one here, because of the four-person, it was tough because you had to hit them the same place. So we're going to have a women's division as well. And so you'll call your best buddy up and go, let's go win this thing. So when you play at the front level, there'll be a gross and 2 net divisions. And then those winners will advance on, and we'll just say, for example, it's a Turtle Bay. I'm just taking a course. We haven't talked to anybody yet. They're Hawaii. But
right.
If it happened to be that you would go there and play in the sectionals against all the other 24 course winners, which is cool. And then if you win that stage, you then go to Las Vegas, all expenses paid except for the airfare. Airfare always has to be paid, but the hotel, green fees, welcoming cocktail parties, food, everything's covered. It's really going to be an incredible deal for these golfers that happen to qualify for that.
You know, you've got John Daly as one of your guys who's going to be playing next week. Are you going to videotape this, and are you going to digitally tape this?
Yes, we are, because it's going to be, we've already played the format with 6 people. So what's going to happen is John Daly's going to play with 4 amateurs and their PGA club professional, and there's a purse for the club professionals in this. So what's going to happen is they're going to tee off 3 at a time, hit all 6 in the fairway and putt 3 at a time, and they're going to play as a 12-some. And the last time we played it, we finished in under 4 hours as a 12-some. And it's going to be a little longer now. It's going to be a 9-hole championship. It'll probably take a couple hours, but we are going to film it. And Danielle, if you can imagine 4 very good golfers hitting wedges from 100 yards, the best way I can explain it, it's like a scene from like a movie where they're firing thousands of arrows that go in the air, like in the old days.
Yeah.
You'd see all these arrows take off, and these balls all are flying at the pin, and when they hit, it's just, even the sound of the balls hitting the green, it's going to be the most visually spectacular event in the history of golf. And that, it sounds like I'm being maybe overblowing it, but it's not. For somebody to actually see this, it's mind-blowing, and everybody has a smile on their face from the first tee shot to the last putt. It's really something.
I'm smiling right now, and I'm just visualizing it.
Oh, it's so cool.
I've got to talk to you. We've got to bring John Richardson in. John, have you heard about Set Scramble in Europe?
Well, I haven't actually, but I checked out the website before I came on air, and it looks really good fun. I think anything like this is a great idea, because I think anything like this that takes you, that you play golf in a slightly different way, can only improve your general golf. I think anything that just makes it more fun can only improve your golf. So I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, and I love the part when you watch the guys in the Ryder Cup deciding, you know, how they're the strategy that they had to go through. This is a similar kind of strategy that you and your teammate will go through when you're playing the set scramble, because you're playing its best ball. So you both tee off together, and then wherever the ball, then you decide, okay, now we should go for this location. And you know which one of you is better at that particular, so you'll probably want that person to take the lead, even though you're going to hit at the same time. Do I have that right, Dave?
Yes, and you know, I think John will appreciate this too. I know that he's gone through a lot, and you know, I played a high level of golf at one time. I tried the tour back in 80 and 81, but the Johnny Miller's son Andy, who is a tour player at one time, played in our inaugural event. And he said something very interesting. I think John will appreciate this. He said his entire life, in golf, you basically hit the ball when you're ready. It's like a free throw in basketball. You take your time, and when you're ready, you shoot. And for the first time ever, golf became a reactionary sport where he was told when to hit the ball. Yeah. And the mindset's completely different. And the teammates must, before they hit a shot, for example, if a pin's tucked super tight behind a bunker where there's no margin for error, the players have to decide, for example, if I hit a high cut where I can approach the shot better, I may say, look, I'm going to go for the pin. You play at the center of the green. But now the guy that's hitting it to the center of the green, the pressure on him is immense, because if he screws up, the team's in a mess. So it's going to bring a strategy involved. It's never been happened in golf before. And it was funny when we filmed the television show Country vs. Rock and Roll, Boo Weekly, after a shot, he almost holed out in all four balls. He walked down the fairway and said, that's the most awesome thing I've ever seen in my life. And it was really funny. And by the way, he's such a gentleman. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And there's things that will happen. Like there'll be par fives where you hit over water where one guy has to lay up because he can't get over the water. So anyway, it's going to be something we think is going to be very enjoyable and different, and will make people come and play a different way of golf.
Excellent.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. Your remark about it, you know, making it into much more of a reactive sport is absolutely spot on, and I think that can only be to the benefit, because one of the key things that I see most amateurs doing is that thing where they freeze over the ball, you know, and get intimidated and terrified by all of those other factors that are out there. If you turn it into a slightly more reactive game, you can wipe all of that out. So I think there are huge potential benefits for golfers to change their mindset as much as anything else in terms of golf, over and above the fun aspect of it.
Sure.
And I can see Boo Weekly. I can clearly see Boo Weekly being very good at it, because you've got to assume that actually at heart he is a kind of a reactive golfer, you know?
Yeah.
And we are getting calls from different places around the world, and our intention, and John, you and I should talk, but our intention is to go global with this event eventually, where, for example, Ireland and Scotland, everybody will have their own championships, and they'll send their team to the finals. And that's we're looking at doing that in 2012. So we'll have to talk about Ireland when someday in the future. And with a name like mine, McCracken, and my sons are Riley McCracken and Connor McCracken, I think we'll get
there.
Yeah.
So you're of Spanish origin, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, of course, we're going to have to, what I'll do is if it's okay with you both, I'll send emails to both of you. So that you both okay, great, good. Dave, thanks so much for being on the show with us this morning. Really,
you're welcome.
Appreciate
Thank
your
you
time.
Very much for having us. Thank
Absolutely.
You very
Absolutely. We're going to take a break and wrap it up. We've got Ron Syrak from Golf World joining us, the executive editor. He was at the Ryder Cup. But first, we've got to talk with John about Graham McDowell and the way he played in the Ryder Cup this past week. We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club. Moon Physical Therapy is here to help you back to recovery. Moon Physical Therapy is located on Ward Avenue across from Sports Authority. Physician prescribed for motor vehicle accidents, workman's comp, or that body pain that comes from rushing to play without warming up. Also event cardiopulmonary rehabilitation with our one-on-one patient care. Moon's Aquatherapy heated endless pool allows for low-impact exercise with less pain on land. We will give you the right exercises to get you back to health. Ask your doctor to prescribe Moon Physical Therapy. Moon Physical Therapy. We achieve results.
Star Protection Agency has been providing security across Hawaii since 1991. Guards on foot, bike, and patrol cars for your business, buildings, or retail. Whether it's a store or an entire shopping center, Star Protection provides the security you need. One call does it all. 532-3911 or on the web at starprotectionagency.com. Star Protection is peace of mind.
Off a tree, hit a rock, and bounce next to the pin. That's my kind of golf. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
I didn't want to leave out all of our special award winners for 2010 from the Aloha Section PGA. We also have Art Rago, the junior golf leader from Waiehu on Maui. Congratulations. The Merchandiser of the Year, Private Course, Mark Souza, Mid-Pack Country Club, cool. And the Merchandiser of the Year on a public course, Tim Murphy from Ko'olau, excellent. And the Sales Representative of the Year is Neil Takara, Titleist Rep. So, we're going to the Ryder Cup. And Graham McDowell is up against Hunter Mann. It's the last two guys on the course. And, boy, Ricky Fowler, four birdies, manages to win that match. And talk about crunch time. That was an amazing moment. Graham is probably, a U.S. Open defending champ now. He said he had absolutely no expectations at Dunhill. He actually played at Dunhill following the Ryder Cup. I was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
So many golfers, wouldn't do that. They wouldn't play the Pebble Beach Pro-Am AT&T, which is kind of what Dunhill is, right? You have the celebrity types playing with the professional guys, and you're playing on three different courses, which is what they do at AT&T Pebble Beach. So here, Graham McDowell's out there. He said, "I had no expectations. I bogeyed the last two holes. Oh well, they've been going in for me pretty good lately."
Mm-hmm.
I should say, what was it like for you watching the Ryder Cup?
Well, I think there's so many fascinating moments. We could sit here and talk for hours about it. But Ricky Fowler was amazing because Ricky Fowler plays like Rory, And I just loved the birdieing of those last four holes. He had a few brain fades through the other days, but it's the thing, as Rory does, of course. But those two guys have the potential to be the next Jack and Tom or Jack and Arnie. There's no doubt about it. There's just huge talent there. But I think the thing that, for when you move out of that inspired talent that they've got, which arguably is the same sort of talent that folk like Phil Mickelson have, like Seve had, and you move into that more normal, potentially journeyman pro, the likes of which Graham McDowell was for a long period of time, a lot of initial promise. And then you see his whole career rejuvenated to an extent, I think partly by Rory, because they're good friends, they play a lot together, and he sort of sees the possibility again, and probably gets a bit of a kick up the backside in terms of thinking, I'm going to miss my opportunity here. But I think what's fascinating to me about it is that anchor position which he had, he would never have got if it wasn't for the fact that he'd won the U.S. Open, if it wasn't for the fact that he'd got into that position where he was able to come up and perform on the final nine holes of a major, which is what Jack Nicklaus used to always say was that was what his life was about. That was what he lived for, the pressure of the final nine holes on a Sunday at a major, and that's of course why he won 18 majors.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to be able to cope with that, to be able to relish it, is the key reason, I think, as to why he sent, Monty sent Graham McDowell out there. And I just, the psychology behind all of this fascinates me. But I thought it was a fascinating moment, and he really, rose to the challenge as well. I feel desperately sorry for Hunter Mahan, I have to say. I really, really do. Because I think, and I know he was very upset about it too, but you can potentially, you need to be able to recover from that. And I love the way that the U.S. team all sort of came around him and said, look, we all lost it, But what an amazing Ryder Cup, though,
Yes.
We're getting as close as that. Just wonderful.
Yes, and Hunter's 27. It just to give you some you know, idea. He's a young man in the game. He's had a lot of experience, but not that clinch moment experience. Not that, you know, where you got to pull it out from the depths of your soul to go that distance and to, you know, I mean, that, I'm sure on those last couple of strokes that he had to hit, he was just killing himself.
Absolutely.
Because,
well, when he fluffed it there, it was just, it was heartbreaking.
Oh. You know, and to have everybody watching you, you know, your entire team, we would have almost understood if Tiger had lost. Nobody expected Phil to win.
That's right, yeah.
You know, I mean, really. I mean, it was like, oh, Phil's not going to win. And Tiger, he has, you know, nobody's are hiding him in eighth or wherever they put him. You know, it was, and then I do find, I love watching, and when they, I think I got to watch Gary Player on television and Arnold Palmer choosing the UBS Cup. It was called the UBS Cup back then, and I don't know what it's become or if it even exists anymore. But I got to watch them choose who was going to play against each other in singles matches. And I'm telling you, John, it was like watching a chess game.
Yeah.
You know, and seeing how, okay, you're going to pick him, all right? Well, I'm going to put him.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Ooh, then,
it is. And it was just, I got a bigger, just as much of a kick out of watching those two captains choosing their team members.
Mm-hmm.
As I did actually watching the actual event and then seeing how the psychology of the choices actually played out on television. It's just marvelous. So, and Seve Ballesteros, let's bring Seve back in. He's recovering from brain cancer.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to be at the Ryder Cup this year. He made a phone call to the team. Have you heard how he's doing?
I haven't. I mean, I think the it fascinated me, though. Just, I'm not sure how much of this coverage you got, but how much they all of the European players continually talked about him, though, and how many of them are talking about, we're doing this for Seve, we did it for Seve, how inspired they were listening to him. You know, Ian Poulter came on at the end and said, you know, we just did this for Seve, and the ability that he has managed to do to create that amazing career, you know, in terms of winning majors and as a solo golfer, if you know what I mean, and then transport so much of that huge passion into the Ryder Cup as well. So I always have it in my mind that actually the Ryder Cup is not for people like Phil or for Tiger or for even for Jack Nicklaus. Those really, really focused major winning, golf isn't really a team sport normally. And I always think it's an odd thing to persuade people to do that. You know, that absolutely single-minded competitive aspect isn't really what the Ryder Cup is about. It's about everybody getting together, and that's why, you know, it works very well for Monty. You know, he never had that pure, absolute, I will get myself incredibly fit, I'll focus on the mental game, I'll work so hard at it. But the Ryder Cup worked for him, which you can see Tiger really, he's not really all that interested.
Well, I watching Miguel Angel Jimenez, I mean, he was like, he's 48 years old. This is probably his last one.
Uh-huh.
And he's hugging his flag. That's something about the European
unbelievable
team. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Like the European team, each one has their anthem played for them, you know? And I mean, it's just like, you talk about the Euros, they're really coming together. And
but the Spanish thing is bizarre, too, because you've got Jimenez and Sergio and Seve. You know, they somehow Spain seems to create these incredibly passionate Ryder Cup players. You know, Alathabal as well. It's just, I don't know what it is within their psyche that seems to work very well in a Ryder Cup environment.
Yeah, well, yeah. We are KPUA Hilo, KHUI, Honolulu, KONI, Lanai City, KTOH, Kalaheo, KTOH, FM1, Princeville. We're going to be joined by Ron Syrak, and we're going to talk about his experience at the Ryder Cup. I don't know if he wants. Ron, would you like to come in now?
Sure.
Oh,
sure.
Great.
I was fascinated to hear what you were just talking about there. You know, it's funny because one of the things that I came away with is I thought that Hunter Mahan was getting beaten up much too much for the way that the end. To me, the deciding stroke was Graham McDowell's putt on 16. You know, and that was the key shot. And if there's an American who probably could take more of the blame than Hunter Mahan did, it would be Stuart Cink, who let an absolutely crucial half point slip away. But you know, again, it was we saw once again that the European side. I think they have two things that go great for them. First off, I think they have more golf shots than the Americans, particularly around the green, and they can get the ball up and down from anywhere. And secondly, no matter how many Ryder Cups Europe wins, they're always going to play with a healthy chip on their shoulder. And I think that's a huge motivation for them all the time. They could win it 10 times in a row, and that still somehow they would be able to come in feeling like they're the underdog.
Underdogs. Yep,
and that's a positive thing. So
I think that's absolutely right.
But don't they win well? I mean, I just was having so much fun watching just even the pictures of all the champagne and Rory getting doused with the champagne. I mean, it was like this raucous.
Well, you know, yes. I always felt one of the problems for the Americans is I always felt that the Europeans approach that entire week like it's a week-long fraternity party, and the Americans approach it like it's root canal surgery, you know? And just the difference in the way that, the difference in the mindsets that they bring in is, you see it. There's just much more energy and enthusiasm and joy and passion on the European side, and the Americans seem to play tight and stiff, and I thought Corey Pavin made some huge mistakes in terms of blocking out access to his team, and you know, I mean, Monty is talking about what photos he has in the team room, and Pavin's acting as if when he's asked what do you have in your team room, he's acting like, you know, there's nuclear secrets in there or something. It's an entirely different attitude. It's the Europeans have more fun.
Yes, they do. They do have more fun. There was a wonderful YouTube that went around, and it was the team on some lock. And in the middle of the lock, there was this gong, and they were trying to hit, they had to, like, skipping rocks across the lock, the lake, you know, and they were hitting off of the edge of the lake, and you had to skip your ball, and then, bong, you had to hit the gong, right? And one of the players completely missed the lake altogether, and they're just roaring with laughter that he couldn't even hit it in the water. You know, his ball went someplace else. And they're just, and you feel this camaraderie about these guys getting together, and they're just trying to hit the gong in the middle of the lock, you know, and skipping the ball. And you're going, they're going, yeah, here it goes. Oh, no, you know, and that's kind of like their whole thing is this unit of people getting together, and really each one of their shots was the team shot. It was, you could feel, that's how I felt, that each one of the, you know, that's I think what we have lacking. We put so much on the individual having to perform rather than everybody going, okay, now we're all, Tiger's hitting, now we're all hitting together. And having that energy focus, there's something fun about that. There's something fun.
There's this much more of a spirit of camaraderie ingrained in European culture, and you look at it in terms of, I mean, you know, the European Union and how many nations it is, and even before that, you look at it in terms of what World Cup soccer has always meant, and Americans don't really have that experience. We sort of have it a little bit with the Olympics when it comes around. But the idea of having national teams that you rally around is a much more ingrained in European culture than it is in American culture.
Yes, and on that note, John, do you need to go and take care of your wife and child, or are they going to knock you around a little bit more for being on the air?
I love the way that you are so continually concerned about my wife and daughter. You clearly empathize with them. I'm good. I'm okay. I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated relentlessly with this European versus American argument with them. I mean, I think one of the key moments for me was a few years ago when I went down to the K Club with my father, actually, and you know, which is of course just a few weeks after Darren Clark's wife had died, and the huge, overwhelming, tangible feeling of European camaraderie, and then that sort of coming around Darren, was amazing, absolutely incredible, you know. And I think there is a very, very strong sense of camaraderie, certainly within the European team.
Well, you know, John, I was fascinated by the fact that that Sergio was willing to be an assistant captain, you know.
Unbelievable.
Because here's a guy who can be a little bit of a selfish person, you know.
Absolutely.
And he totally did what was right for the team. And I remember I heard a TV commentator saying, he's the youngest assistant captain in Ryder Cup history. And I'm thinking, well, that's probably not a good thing, is it?
No.
But it means you're washed up at an early age.
Well, I mean, I've been sort of, what was it, you know, 15 months or so ago, a couple of years ago, he was, couldn't he get up to 2 or 3 in the world? And it just seemed to be as if he was really finally getting the promise together, and it was going to, you know, go right back to 1999, and the US PGA was finally there, and to be that washed up to an extent, and still feel comfortable come along there and not be humiliated. And he didn't seem humiliated in any way.
None, not at all.
No, it was, I was totally surprised and impressed that he was doing that.
Exactly. I want to take a break. We need to take one more, take care of the people who make this show possible, and it'll take about 2 minutes of your time. But I need to make this statement because I think this is enormous, and it really intrigued me. Is the Ryder Cup the best made-for-television event? And that was so provocative to me when that statement was made that I just want to tease you with that. We're going to take that up right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Moon Physical Therapy is here to help you back to recovery. Moon Physical Therapy is located on Ward Avenue across from Sports Authority. Physician prescribed for motor vehicle accidents, workman's comp, or that body pain that comes from rushing to play without warming up. Also, event cardiopulmonary rehabilitation with our one-on-one patient care. Moon's aquatherapy heated endless pool allows for low-impact exercise with less pain on land. We will give you the right exercises to get you back to health. Ask your doctor to prescribe Moon Physical Therapy. Moon Physical Therapy. We achieve results. Summer is coming. Whether you're in an office, store, building, or shopping center, your AC on the fritz can ruin your day and stop your business. Alakai Mechanical does it all, from design to installation to preventative maintenance of your AC system so that it operates more efficiently. Alakai's world-class technicians use only quality components to keep you cool. Protect your investment, from window units to chiller plants across Hawaii. Call Alakai Mechanical, keeping Hawaii cool.
When you walk into your office or get up in the morning, what's the first thing you do? Turn on your computer and check your mail. Oh no, what does that mean? The hard drive can't be located. Whether it's a PC or Mac, desktop, laptop, network, whatever your problem, call the computer doctor on Nimitz Highway next to Eagle Cafe. Bring it in or call for an on-site appointment. The computer doctor is there to get you back up and running fast. When you need service or want the right new computer, call 532-7213. The computer doctor is on call.
Yeah, a mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
And welcome back. Thank you to Kapalua Golf Academy, Jerry King, and TaylorMade. Because of you, I get to give away two sleeves of TaylorMade Penta. Beautiful pearls. Oh, they're so nice. The 18th caller, 296. 5467, that's 808-296-5467. I will send them to you. We're talking with Ron Cyrak. He is the executive editor of Golf World and Golf World Monday Digital. It's a very good thing, digital. And Golf World comes in, you know, I like touching, you know, I like the holding and all that stuff. I think this picture of them applauding, the U.S. team applauding afterwards, they just so dejected and sitting there in those in the bleachers afterwards while the other team was just having such, it's so hard, but they were so good. They did a good job of being the losers. I'm sorry to say that. But what I asked Ron when I, you know, as we were on chatting, and I said, well, what did you think of the Ryder Cup? And what was your answer, Ron?
I think it's become the best made-for-TV event in golf, and one of the best made-for-TV events in all of sports. It's, you know, one of the great things about match play is you don't need a great. The quality of the golf doesn't have to be great for a match to be great. you know, for it to be entertaining. And that's what it's the tension. Two people can be out there shooting 74, 75 and still have a great match.
Exactly.
They could be out there shooting 66 and 67 and having a great match. And so the entertainment value, in my mind, transcends what the quality of golf is all about. It is 18 mini dramas, you know, that take place consecutively. And I just find it in highly, highly entertaining.
Okay, now, when you say made for TV, sometimes, you know, people might take that as like, well, wait a minute, this isn't just, you know, made for television is invited to cover it.
I think it's easier to enjoy the experience. I mean, it's being at a Ryder Cup is a great atmosphere, but quite frankly, it's become, you know, when you have 45,000 spectators and there's only four groups on the golf course at a time, it's very difficult to see anything. Plus, you can't always be. I mean, with TV, you can bounce around from match to match, and you can experience all four matches going on at the same time. And at a great golf tournament, when I was at the U.S. Open this year, or at the Masters, or at the British Open, you can walk with the last group and watch the match play its way out. But at a Ryder Cup, that's not happening because there's four groups going out there that you want to be with. And I just think that you can experience that more intimately and on TV than you can actually be in there.
Yeah, and they really tried hard to make it possible for the spectators, all 45,000 of them, to enjoy the mud bogs aside, the action with these jumbotrons.
Yeah.
Do you think those helped?
I do. I think that, I mean, it's weird to be, it's weird to be at a golf tournament and to be standing there watching it on TV, you know, which people do that. And there's believe me, there's a lot of technology that TV brings to the table right now that enhances the viewing pleasure of watching golf. There's nothing ever like to substitute for the experience of actually being at any major sporting event, you know, when it's really happening. But in a Ryder Cup, in a match play situation, the odds that you're in the right place at the right time are much less than they are in a stroke play tournament.
Absolutely. And I was amazed because some people send pictures of what it looked like outside the ropes. And I say that very, very loosely. And I mean that in what you did not see on television was the muddy conditions, the slopes of mud, the people were sliding down. Matt Cooper, who was there last week and was on the show from the Ryder Cup, he said that it was dangerous in some places because they were afraid of mudslides from the rain.
You know, that's a great point to make, and it gives us an opportunity to thank people here that sometimes we overlook. And this year, I'm president of the Met Golf Writers Association in New York City here, and we gave our top award this year to the superintendent at Bethpage for what he pulled off getting that U.S. Open finished with zillions of volunteer superintendents from the tri-state area around here. But it was the same thing happening in Wales. The amount of work that goes in from the incredible staff, because we see, and when you're watching on TV, the golf course looks in great shape, and it's only when you see outside the ropes that you realize how much damage has been done to the area. And it was totally, totally chewed up outside of the ropes. But the fact that they were able to keep the competitive area of the golf course in such great shape is just a true tribute to the hard work done by people who really know how to do their job.
Yeah, it was amazing to me. I want to talk about your books, and I want to talk about what you have accomplished something. I read a book, and John, you've heard this. A book that came out, Every Shot Must Have a Purpose.
Yes.
Beg your pardon?
Pia Nielsen.
Yes. And yep. Lynn Marriott. Yep. Written with Ron Sirach. Okay.
That's a wonderful, wonderful book.
Yes. And so I'm reading it as golfers, to some of golf's top players, as coaches to some of golf's top players, and owners of the country's number one golf school, Pia Nielsen and Lynn Marriott, have designed and refined a revolutionary way of teaching the game with phenomenal results. This got me. Just, bam, got to buy this. I haven't read this. They don't believe in prescribing the same stance, grip, and swing to everyone. followed by hours of purposeless drilling, their success has proven to them that a great game begins with a great vision. Unlike any other book, any other golf book, Every Shot Must Have a Purpose offers cutting-edge techniques for integrating the physical, technical, mental, emotional, and social parts of a player's game. The book's revolutionary pre-shot routine improves the player's focus, leading to a golf swing that is not only successful, but can be repeated under extreme pressure, emphasizing the individual golfer rather than a rigid set of mechanics. Their Vision 54 method takes the frustration out of the game. Did you write that, Ron?
That sounds like it was written by the PR department for Gotham Books, actually. But, I was very, very, very fortunate that Pia and Lynn trusted me with their stuff. We've just finished our third book now. And you know, the cool thing about their approach to the game is, they say, you're not a golfer who happens to be a person. You're a person who happens to be a golfer. And also the fact that it's a game and we play it. And they try to connect the human being to the joy and the passion of being out there. They believe there's more than one right way to swing a golf club. I mean, certainly there are fundamentals involving grip and stance and posture that you sort of have to be in the ballpark on, or you're not going to succeed. But they'll look at Jack Nicklaus's flying elbow. They'll look at Arnold Palmer's slash at the ball. There's a lot of Lee Trevino. There's a lot of very individual golf swings that were very, very successful.
We were just talking earlier, John and I, about Jim Furyk. I mean, it's not a beautiful swing. Rory McIlroy may have a beautiful swing, but, you know, somehow Jim manages to get from wherever he is in his backswing to the ball.
the key to scoring is repeatability, you know, and you just got to be able to repeat the swing. Annika Sorenstam, and the way that I got to know P. M. Lin really was when Sorenstam decided she wanted to play in a men's event, and I was trying to figure out why would she take such a gamble? Why would she risk her reputation? Why would she get to do it? And in getting through there, I eventually realized that Annika's goal, you know, she wasn't going to define success by whether she made the cut or not at Colonial. She was going to define success in terms of how well she handled the enormity of the moment. And on that, by that measuring stick, she was a huge success. It was one of the most pressure-filled weeks I've ever seen a golfer go through, and she did very, very well. But, you know, Pian Lin believed it's Annika was not the best ball striker I ever saw playing women's golf, probably not in the top 10 best ball strikers. But she repeated the swing over and over and over again. And if there's one word I would use to describe her, both physically and emotionally, it's balance. And I think that's what Pian Lin strive for, that a player needs to remain with a swing that's in balance and with emotions that are in balance on the golf course.
Now, I sometimes hear about some of the players that are practicing and maybe even teeing off with headsets in and playing their favorite music. Is that part of the taking the personality of the individual, the social part of the player, into the game?
You know, they would work less with something like that, because you can't do that in competition. And what they do is instead teach skills where you can, and I don't know if you saw Yanit Singh this year when she was winning the Women's British Open Championship.
Yep.
They were working with her, and she would have a serious self-talk problem. That little voice would start whispering negative thoughts into her head. So they had her singing songs between shots. And so when she hit a shot and would walk to the next shot, she'd be singing so that those negative thoughts couldn't come into her mind. And then what they did is they speeded up what Pian Lin teach is 4 to 9 seconds over the golf ball, max, you know, no more than 9 seconds, no less than four. Get in there. Once you take your stance, if you watch any Pia and Lin student, they take no practice swings once they're up at the ball. If they're going to take a practice swing, it's behind the ball. And again, you know, that whole thing, every shot must have a purpose. Well, every swing should have a purpose. The only reason to take a practice swing, in my mind, is if you're in the rough and you're testing what kind of resistance
you can be. You get from that.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
What they teach is you get to the ball, step in, connect with the target visually, and then let it fly. And they worked with Hiani that way. They had her singing to herself between shots, and she was able in that way to silence that self-talk. And, you know, and again, one of their other mantras that P and Lin teach is, you're your own best teacher. We want to teach you how to be your own best coach so that you can do things like that on the golf course and keep distraction from coming in.
Excellent. God, you know, I want to, why didn't they have the Navistar LPGA Classic in between the end of the FedEx Cup and the Ryder Cup?
Well, they had a tournament in there that folded. They had a tournament in Acapulco, and I mean, it's been believe me, you know, honestly, and as much as I love women's golf and as much as time as I spend at women's tournaments, there was a point last week where I actually had to change the schedule, check the schedule to find out whether or not they were playing.
Uh-huh.
And that's a problem. You know, I mean, it's been really difficult. There've been some good stories out there. It was very, very difficult for them that they lost their two best players, Sorenstam and Ochoa, so closely. And there's a lot of really good stories out there in Ai Miyazato and G.A. Shin and Suzanne Pedersen. But they're not having enough opportunities to tell those stories. You know, Yanni Singh's 21 years old and has won 3 major championships. That's remarkable. But no one really knows the story. So.
No, and she may break Jack's record before Tiger does.
Yeah.
And we've run out of time. It's talking with you. It's like I'm adrenaline fueled. It's wonderful. And with John Richardson, breakparblueprint.com. If you've got a frustration, go to that site, check it out, and help him with his research. He wants to know what is stopping you from performing your best as he does his research. His movie, his book is becoming a movie, Dream On. It has started shooting in July. Congratulations, John. I'm so,
thank you,
so excited. I mean, you know, Ron, he got 83 rejections on Dream On. It got published, and now it's becoming a movie. It's just wonderful. You just have to stick to it.
Yep.
Kind of like when I first met you, I had to just keep seeing if I could get you to be on the show. Thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me. John, absolutely, great being on with you.
And you, Ron.
Thank you both for being on the show. And I need to thank our sponsors for making it possible. So aloha to Ron Cyrak, editor of Golf World and Golf World Monday. You can sign up to get yours online. And you can always go to Break Par Golf Blueprint, breakparblueprint.com to find. Thank you, Rick, my engineer, my executive producer, Kim, Kim Box. I think it's Kim Box. Kim, we're going to call you. You're in Kalihi. You won the Pentas, okay? And you won them a long time ago. But we were so in the midst of talking. And wrap it up, Danielle. The Golf Club is sponsored by Alakai Mechanical, the best minds in plumbing and air conditioning statewide. Excellent service, expert knowledge, work, and product you can depend on. Alakai Mechanical. Star Protection, get the star team on your property for foot patrol, for building security, shopping centers, or whether, you know, you've got a little residential community, or maybe you're putting on a big event like the SPS Championship. You've got stars everywhere, and you need protection. Call Star Protection. Moon Physical Therapy, doctor-recommended, insurance-approved. Whether you've been hurt in a workman's comp-related accident, or it's been a car accident, or maybe you're recovering from a serious surgery, like a hip replacement, on Ward Avenue, right across from Sports Authority, Moon Physical Therapy. We achieve results. And the computer doctor, whether you've got a Mac or a PC, a desktop, a laptop, your network has failed, whatever the problem is, the computer doctor is always on call. Give him a call. 808golf.com for all of your local scores. Catch the Golf Club. We're at radiogolfclub.com. Radiogolfclub.com. You can listen to us live every Saturday morning, or you can listen to the archive shows. You can go to iTunes Podcast and find us there as well, or Stitcher Radio. Thank you for your mana. May you hit the sweet spot every time. I'm Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. KTOH-FM 99.9. KONI-FM 104.7. KTUA-AM 670. KUNU-AM 1500. Tune in next week and we'll tee it up together only on the Golf Club.
This broadcast is copyright of the Golf Club Radio Show 2010.